Hi everyone, a warm welcome to Puerto Podcast episode 72. Today we do another episode in English because I have an international fund here with me today. It's a fund company called Active Niche based in Switzerland. Today we will focus on their Active Solar Fund, a global listed equity fund focused on companies active in the solar PV industry. Warm welcome, Pascal Rochat, founder and fund manager at Active Niche Funds.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody.
Information provided in this podcast should not be considered investment advice. Please see our website, paritosec.com/compliance, for a complete disclaimer and more information.
Could you start by describing the fund and the idea behind it?
Yes, well, I launched the company quite a long time ago. It was in 2007. And I don't come from the finance industry myself. I used to be chief risk officer of one of the largest utilities in Switzerland. And in 2007, I got the feeling that solar was going to play a major role in the future of energy. So I decided to launch a company and a fund all together. Then the company grew a bit and we have another fund focusing on, I would say, the big story of energy transition. It's a fund on the recycling worldwide industry.
And 2007, around that time, how was the solar market then? It seems like it was quite early.
Yes, it was super early. Of course, we did not realize that, but the market was very, very small. We're talking more than 100 times smaller as it is today. So obviously, it was only the launch of the industry. So we were very early, and you can also see that through the track record of the portfolio, because basically there was a big growth in the solar sector, but also lots of growth crises. So basically the first 10 years were extremely difficult for investors.
And did you work with the engineer, or how did your interest for solar markets arise?
Well, it's coming from my experience at utility, I should say. And then we got to meet Professor Baif. He's one of the top scientists in Europe and in the world for research in photovoltaics. And he's become our technological advisor, because if you're managing a solar fund, you should absolutely have the technological pieces of advice of a high level scientist, I should say, in order to understand the technology and the product.
And back then, I could imagine it was higher costs.
Well, it is true. It was much more expensive. Actually, the cost of generating electricity with solar photovoltaics was divided by 10 in 10 years only, roughly between 2009 and 2019, divided by 10. So it means today, on average, in most countries, solar has become the cheapest source of electricity, generating electricity in the range of 4 cents per kilowatt hours. That is much, much cheaper than gas and coal, currently like 2 or 3 times cheaper. And you already have the best plants in the world generating electricity in the range of 2 cents per kilowatt hours. And that's a world record. There's never been electricity generated that cheap from whatever source of electricity. So cost went down a lot. And at the same time, markets developed massively. Of course, it is linked together. So when we started in 2007, 2008, there were only a couple of gigawatts of new installations per year. But nowadays, we're talking hundreds of gigawatts per year. So last year in the world, there were roughly 240 gigawatts of new installations. 1 gigawatt is about the size of a big nuclear reactor. So it's significant. Actually, the solar panels installed in the world last year, they are enough to power a country like France. And this year, we're expecting a growth in the range of plus 50%. So we will reach 350 gigawatts of new installations. And the market should even double by 2025 and reach in the range of above 500 gigawatts in a single year, and even reach 1 terawatt, meaning 1,000 gigawatts in a single year before 2030. So the market is really growing a lot.
So if it's cost effective and it's cheap and it's the market, it's huge. And why isn't all electricity from solar panels and solar the solar market. What's the problem then?
There's no problem, but of course you need to change a power sector that is very big and that has been based on coal and gas for almost a century. So of course it takes time. So nowadays solar is generating roughly 5% of world electricity. In Europe it's a bit more, it's already 7.2%. And it's growing a lot. I mean, if you look at expectations of the International Energy Agency, they are releasing once a year a big report that's called the World Energy Outlook. And in the latest report, they have a forecast for solar to reach 20% of world electricity generation by 2030. But I can tell you that looking at the growth we're experiencing now and we're seeing in the next 2 years, I can tell you that there's a high likelihood it's going to be more than that, in the range of 23 to 25%. So you see, it's moving very fast. And actually, for any source of electricity to move from 5% to 25% of world electricity generation in only 8 years is a revolution. It's something very, very big happening. And I can tell you there is a consensus within the world of energy today that this is happening. And the consensus is not only within the utilities, but also with the big oil company that are investing $1 billion into solar. Consensus to such a point that the IEA coined solar as the new king of electricity supply.
If the outlook is correct and the scenario will happen, what will it take to get there in terms of investments, installations, R&D, electricity, grid improvements, regulations, etc.?
Well, I would like to say first, in terms of regulation and politics, most of the things are now in place. If I look at Europe, of course, Europe is trying to get rid of dependency towards Russian gas. And last year, the EU released a strategy that's called Repower EU. And within this strategy, you've got a solar target for EU to reach 740 gigawatt by 2030. It stands today at 210. And there are many other things like promoting easier procedures, or making procedures or approval times much shorter for solar parks, etc., etc. So most of the things are moving in the right direction. So there's not really anything missing, I would say, but it's taking time. And of course, it will take lots of investments. But when you talk energy or power, there is a lot of money, and anyway it needs to be invested somewhere to cope with the growth in electricity demand and to cope with the energy transition. But the question is, where do you invest? And now, as I said, there's a clear consensus that the money is to be invested in renewables. And by the way, I'd like to mention, and that I guess few of our auditors would be aware, but I would like to mention that if you look at every new power facility being installed in the world today, 60% of every new gigawatt being installed in the world today is solar. And that is very amazing, and it's actually a key argument for us in order to convince investors to have a clean exposure on the solar industry, to have a clean solar line in the portfolio instead of just a broad renewable fund.
So the potential is clearly big. But what are the challenges here? Could there be installed solar parks everywhere in Sweden, for example, where we don't have sun as much? Or where in the world, or where geographically would this happen?
It's happening everywhere, because the story of solar is a story of decentralization of electricity production. But obviously, I mean, a solar panel is producing more in Madrid than in Stockholm, and more in, let's say, the Californian desert than in Madrid. But it doesn't make that much of a big difference. because solar has become so cheap. So like in Spain, you would have the cheapest solar farm that would generate electricity in the range of 2 cents per kilowatt hours. But you would still be able to generate at 4 cents per kilowatt hours in the north of Europe. So, I mean, it would still be competitive.
Mm. In Sweden, we have some problem with the landowners that don't want like wind parks in their backyard, etc. Is it the same problem with solar parks?
It's much less a problem for solar for obvious reason, because of course a wind tower, you will see it and hear it from quite far away. I would say contrary to what most people believe, solar does not need that much land. Mm-hmm. And I can give you data around it. I can give you the example of the USA. The Department of Energy in the USA released a report where they said, okay, we're targeting solar to reach 40% of US electricity. How much land do we need? Mm. And they computed that they need 0.5% of the land. Sounded a little bit too much to me, but then they said, in fact, it's very little, because it amounts to less than 10% of what they call discarded land. Mm. So in the US, it's less than 10% of the land that is not possible to use for anything else, because it's super rocky, polluted, ex-industrial, etc., etc. So actually, land is not an issue, and you might be surprised, but if you look at the installations last year, 240 gigawatt, I said it's massive. Well, half of these millions of solar panels were installed on rooftops, so individual houses and commercial buildings. So the rooftop market is absolutely huge.
Mm. And the return on investment is quite short, right?
Yeah, it once again depends where you are installing the solar panels, yeah. But it is true that in the most sunny part of the world, return on investment could be as short as like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And maybe up north here, it could be in the range of 7 to 10 years. But then the solar panels will generate electricity for 40, 50 years. Mm. So once you are paid back on your investment, it's just free electricity because maintenance is almost zero.
Yeah, that's one thing compared to wind parks that needs to be fixed and reparations all the time. It's not maintenance job is not that much, right?
No, it's extremely low. It's almost nothing, actually. In some parts of the world, especially in parts where there's lots of sand, etc., the panels could get dusty, so you would need to clean them. So it would be either made by very cheap labor force, like in countries like in India. Otherwise, then that's in most of the cases with robots, just working on solar energy, by the way, and all the way and all day cleaning the panels. So and that's very little. And actually, one of the big advantage of solar. You invest everything on day one. So you know how much it costs, and then you know exactly how much electricity it will generate, because a solar panel in any given place on the world, I mean, you would look at the quantity of energy coming from the sun, and this is very stable. It's super stable, obviously not on a daily basis, but on a yearly or if you look at 3-5 years, it is very, very stable, much more than wind, by the way, that can vary it a lot. So you know how much it costs, you know how much electricity it will generate, and therefore you're able to sign long-term contracts where you agree as an owner of the solar park to sell electricity at a fixed price for like 10, 20 years sometimes. And nowadays, obviously, every company, every corporation, especially in Europe, is looking to sign these PPAs in order to free themselves, I would say, from the electricity market with skyrocketing prices.
Mm. And also, you mentioned it before, but the sound from wind parks is also annoying for some people, and you don't have that in solar parks.
No, obviously, I mean, solar is 100% silent. But don't get me wrong; I've got nothing against wind. Wind is part of the story.
I think
wind is part of the story. But it is true that now, if you look at every scenario of the International Energy Agency, including the very negative scenario in terms of climate change, where nobody wants to go, well, in every scenario, solar is becoming the first source of electricity. The only question is when. Is it already going to be in the early 2030? And I think it is, because most probably solar will generate, as I said before, probably 23-25% of world electricity in 2030. That would be the first source of electricity already. And wind in the range of 20%. And if you look further down the road, maybe in 2040-45, we could as well live in a world where solar could account for, let's say, 40% of world electricity, and maybe wind roughly the same size.
And often when you talk about the energy transition and renewable energy sources, you talk about them as everything is needed, and you need all the different kind of sources in order to be able to meet the demand of electricity. But if you compare to other energy sources, when do solar panels work best?
Solar panels don't work at night, but that everybody knows. But joking aside, of course, I mean, there will always be an electricity mix. But as opposed to what was believed 5 or 10 years ago, it's now agreed upon that it's absolutely possible to have electricity only sourced from solar and wind. And actually, it's been modelized for the European markets on an hourly basis. How would it work if we have 50% solar, 50% wind? Well, it does work, but of course, we will need to make some changes compared to the way the grid is working today. There are several things. First, of course, in order to manage the grid, we will need more storage. Currently, most of the storage is made by big dams, mostly in the Alps. But nowadays, there's more and more batteries coming online. The battery industry is growing a lot. Batteries are getting cheaper and cheaper. And nowadays, one large solar farm in the world out of two is being coupled with big size batteries. So batteries are going to be part of the story. Another part of the story is probably keeping some of the extra electricity generated during the summer for the winter. This could be made potentially with hydrogen, because batteries are only good for day and night, short-term storage.
What's the maximum storage? Is it like 14 hours in a battery?
I'm not a battery specialist, but batteries are really made for short term. So if you want a seasonal storage, we should use something else like hydrogen. But I would like to say as well that part of the story around decarbonization and around producing like almost 100% of the electricity with renewables is that we will need electricity for everything, not only for the grid. Right, so we will need electricity for transportation. It could be directly, but it could be indirectly through hydrogen. For example, with hydrogen, you can transform hydrogen into synthetic fuels for the plane, for the lorries. You could potentially use it for heavy industry like cement or steel. So that's also part of the story. What it means that at any given time, most probably, the electricity production is going to be much, much bigger than what the grid needs. So it means that then the fluctuation of production is not going to impact on a one-to-one basis on the grid. There's only part of the fluctuation that will need to be compensated by the batteries.
How far has hydrogen come?
Hydrogen is probably where solar was 15 or 20 years ago. So hydrogen is only at the beginning. But if you look at the strategies of every of the big blocks, be it China, the USA or Europe, everybody has got a hydrogen strategy. So it's only the beginning. People should never mix up hydrogen with solar or wind, because hydrogen is not a source of energy. It carries energy. It's an energy carrier. So it means it's not freely available. It's within water. You need to split the atoms of hydrogen and oxygen with an electrolyzer using lots of electricity. And here you need green electricity to generate green hydrogen. Mm-hmm. So it's only, it's not at the same level, if you want. So, the need of hydrogen and the fact that we will probably need hydrogen to decarbonize the full economy will only increase demand in solar and wind power generation.
But is it a risk that the solar market is happening too fast, and we have too much power that we cannot use?
No, that's not really a risk. I mean, currently, as I said, solar is generating 5% of world electricity. And then the grid operators, they can always, disconnect some part of the grid if it's an overload. So it's not really a risk. But most people or industries today would like to be as independent as they can from the grid. So it means also there's a big demand for not only solar panels, but solar panels plus batteries at an individual level. So you could become absolutely independent from the grid.
And you invest in the whole value chain, and we will get into that a bit more, and we will talk a bit more about your fund and how you invest and your investment strategy. Thank you very much for the market update and your view on the solar market. Very interesting. So with that said, let's go on to your active solar fund. What kind of companies do you invest in?
We invest all across the value chain of photovoltaics. So you should know that first we need polysilicon to make solar panels. It's being cut in very thin layer. We call it the wafer, 1/10 of a millimeter thick. It's being transformed in a cell, assembled in a panel, and installed in solar farms or on rooftop. So we invest in companies doing all of that, plus in every equipment player or services company providing things for the solar industry. But we only look at companies generating at least half of revenue with solar. But actually, most of our companies are pure players, so it's a very pure exposure on the solar industry to the range of 80-90%. We invest worldwide. So currently, the investment universe is 90 listed companies in the world. And then obviously we've got a selection process that is kind of straightforward. There is of course top down, where we look at the technology, also with Professor Baif. It's our global understanding of the plus and minuses of the development of the solar market. The bottom up is all the valuation models we built on the companies, plus ESG analysis, and it leads to the portfolio, where we currently have 27 holdings, so more or less one out of three companies if you look at the universe. And maybe I should tell you here that we've always been very systematic in the way we manage the portfolio. We have a standardized process, and the key decision metric for us in order to decide if a company is overweight or underweight is the risk-return profile of every company. Risk-return means for the return, we look at the expected return on the stock for the next year over the next 12 months. Risk is everything, not only financial risk like balance sheet, P&L, but also risk on the products, on the market, etc., and ESG risk. So obviously, we'd like to have at the top of the portfolio very positive risk-return profile, meaning a risk that is rather low or medium, and expected return that is rather medium or high.
Mm. So in the value chain, where do you find the most interesting companies in terms of the investment criteria you mentioned here?
The short answer is everywhere, but of course, I mean, there are momentums. So there are times where it's better to have a high exposure on polysilicon companies, times where it's better to be elsewhere. For example, on polysilicon, it used to be very good 2 years ago because there was a kind of supply and demand was very, very tight. There was suddenly not enough capacities for making polysilicon. So the prices of polysilicon went up a lot, margins and profits as well. So obviously at that time, we increased exposure in order to take advantage of that. Nowadays, it's the opposite because lots of new polysilicon capacities come online, prices go down, margins go down, etc. So we are less exposed. And we are now more exposed to companies making, manufacturing the solar panels, including the wafer and the cells, up to 30% currently, because these ones are the first one to take advantage of prices of polysilicon going down. It means the margins will go up. And otherwise, the segments that we have, we've got companies in the installation business, so either on rooftops or in big solar farms. We've got companies owning and operating the solar plants. We've got companies manufacturing inverter. I don't know if our auditors know what an inverter is. It's a key machine that does transform electricity that's coming out of the panels, that is continuous current into alternative current. But it does some other thing. It's basically the smart link between the solar installation and the grid. And then finally, we've got some other kind of equipment players. We've got specialized glass company because you need a special kind of glass to make the panels durable for 40, 50 years. We have companies making trackers, allowing the panels to follow the sun when they are in solar farms, etc., etc. So we are very well diversified across all kind of businesses in relationship with the solar industry, and we are also diversified in a geographic way with roughly 30% Europe, 30% China, and 40% USA. And the companies we've got in the portfolio, they are active in all the main markets. Did not mention that earlier, but the biggest market is China, installing more than 100 gigawatt per year. Market number two is Europe, installing more than 70 gigawatt per year. Then comes the USA, around 40 gigawatt, and India, 30 gigawatt. But obviously many, many other countries, like almost every country in the world, is installing solar panels every day and growing.
I get the feeling that you invest mostly early in the value chain or in the middle. Is that correct?
More or less. I mean, it depends what you consider early or not. But I would say it's balanced. It's roughly half in the first part of your value chain until the panels go out, and half after, I would say, with installations, operations. But of course, we have no utilities in the portfolio because utilities would only have a small share of solar, and that would not be good enough for us. But we have some companies called developers. These companies are competing for large solar contracts worldwide, and they would build up solar farms and then they would operate them. So these ones would really be down the value chain, I would say.
Mm. And what's your opinion on consumer companies that's selling solar panels to directly to consumers or to companies?
Well, I mean, you've got several kinds of reseller. You've got the companies making the panels themselves, like the one we have in the portfolio. So I've got some big brand names like, let's say, Canadian Solar, First Solar, Jinko Solar. But then you've got also some big stores like, let's say, IKEA, etc., that would sell panels, maybe rebranded, etc., etc. So, I mean, there are many distribution channels, and that's what interesting. And actually, it's one of the advantage of the solar market. It's highly diversified. So you do not only have utilities as customers, as this wind industry has got, and that's a big issue for the wind industry, because as they only have the utilities, they don't have the pricing power. The utilities have the pricing power. For the solar industry, you've got utilities, you've got oil companies, you've got pretty much every corporation and company in the world that would like to have solar panels on the roof or and sign power purchase agreement with a solar park. And of course, you've got millions of individuals.
Mm.
So it's really what's driving the growth. It's the growth is coming from the base, especially in Europe, where everybody would like to not to be linked to the grid anymore, I would say, and not to be punished anymore by the super high electricity prices.
Mm. And if the listeners are more interesting about in your funds and the companies you invest in, they could of course go to your website and read more about your investments and your funds active niche. But could you give us some few examples of companies you invest in and you like right now?
Well, of course, I mean, if you look at the website and on the fact sheet, you will see the top 10 holdings. But like most managers, I don't like to give names, even though I could. And the reason is because as much there is a little or almost no more risk in the big story of the energy transition where solar is a leader, as much there are still risk, obviously, within the companies. So there's always financial risk. There's also always a risk linked to strategy or to the product, right? So a company in itself is always, I would say, a bit risky. Mm. And many of the early investors into solar had to realize this the hard way, because as I mentioned earlier, the solar industry went through almost crazy growth over the last 15 years, being multiplied by more than 100. Mm. And the growth came with a growth crisis and with many, many bankruptcies. So there were several number one player in the solar industry that went bankrupt one after the other. So you see, in my opinion, it's really not a good idea to pick a stock. But of course, some of the good names and the one some of our listeners might know, there is, for example, Solar Edge. It's a big Israeli company manufacturing inverters. They sell roughly half in the US, half in Europe. So they are well exposed to the big growth in Europe. It's a very good company. In terms of solar panels, we have Canadian Solar. It's half Canadian, half Chinese. It's one of the leader of manufacturing the panels, but they also install large solar farms and operate them. So the revenue stream is to some extent more stable. What else could I mention? Obviously we've got many companies into the fund, but I would like the listeners to focus on the big story, obviously.
Mm. Mm. And you have helped us with explaining the big story here today. Thank you very much for joining the podcast, Pascal.
May I say a word of conclusion? Because I just realized...
Of course.
I just realized I forgot to tell something. Yes, I think it's always interesting to realize That's the main difference between fossil fuels and renewables. Is that for renewables? Well, the fuel is free. The fuel is free. Nobody can make you pay for the sun or for the wind. And that is changing the full dynamics of the energy market. Because up to now, we're only talking the price of oil, gas, and coal, right? So in the future, not only is energy going to be abundant, with most countries becoming independent, but energy will be very cheap and without volatility. Without volatility. Because volatility is not going to be brought in by the machines, by the solar panels or the wind turbines. So it's just to let our listeners reflect on the fact that this is really a big energy revolution that will have some major impact, geopolitical impacts on the world and the economies.
Thank you for joining the podcast, Pekka.
Thank you very much.
The information provided in this podcast should not be considered professional advice and is not intended to constitute investment advice. Investing and trading in all types of securities involves considerable risk at all times, and past performance is not necessarily a guarantee of future performance. Pareto Securities does not accept any form of liability, neither legally nor financially. For any direct or indirect loss or expense that may arise from the use of information provided in this podcast, please see our website paretosec.com/compliance for more information and full disclaimer.